Hello, everyone. Welcome. And my name is Stuart Overman, president and founder of Overman Law Firm. I am very fortunate in that I have the opportunity to work with dental practice owners throughout the country. And it was with great pleasure that we made the decision to present a series of podcasts to assist the dental industry in different practice matters that affect them every day. And maybe one of the biggest problems in the dental office is employee embezzlement. We hear a lot about employee embezzlement, both fact and myth. Today, we have a leader in the area of employee embezzlement in dental practices. Joining us today is David Harris, the president of Prosperident. For those who don't know about the company, they are the leader in today's market regarding the investigation of employee embezzlement. David, good morning. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Stuart. Wonderful to be here with you today.
And for those who don't know about the company, tell us how you got started and what you guys do, and tell us about the company, because it's fascinating.
Well, thank you. Prosperident is the world's largest dental embezzlement investigation firm. We currently have 14 investigators, and dealing with dental practices is all we do. We don't help medical doctors or pharmacists or Walmart or anybody else. It is dentistry only.
Now, you guys are in the United States, and you guys work with dentists all over the world, or just in the States?
Well, head office is actually in Canada, and that sounds like a big deal, but head office is a total of 5 people. Most of our investigators live somewhere in the U.S. We investigate in the United States and Canada and Australia and New Zealand.
I'm fascinated. Do you find the same things that occur in United States, Canada, and New Zealand?
Definitely. Stealing is stealing, and you know, if we didn't have a language barrier, we could probably do investigation in Brazil as well. But we stick to the English-speaking countries of the world. Embezzlement certainly happens in England, which is the other place we don't spend a lot of time. But their system works a little bit different than the United States or Canada, in the sense that most dentistry is publicly funded there. So we just don't see a place for ourselves in that market. But in the rest of the countries that I mentioned, yes, there's a lot of commonality.
So how prevalent, we hear a lot of numbers and figures, how prevalent is embezzlement in a dental practice?
There are parts of the answer to that question that we don't know. We don't know how much embezzlement is never detected. We don't know how much is detected, but the owner of the practice, for various reasons, decides not to do anything about it. What we do know from published statistics is that something around 2 in 3 practices will eventually be embezzled.
That's enormous.
Yes, it is.
What do you know statistically what the average embezzlement is dollar-wise?
I can give you 2 numbers. The first one is generic across all industries. So this comes from the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners. So not a dental-specific statistic, but they suggest that the average amount that a thief steals before they get caught is about $140,000. When we look at our own files for dentistry, the last time we did it, I think, was 2013, and the average amount that a thief stole up to the time they got caught was about $109,000.
And how long does this occur? It's not an overnight process. It's got to occur for years.
It typically goes on for between 2 and 2.5 years before the dentist realizes that he or she has a problem.
In your investigation, and you guys go pretty deep into investigations, is that right?
We can. It depends on what we do. Depends on the circumstance. A lot of people call us with suspicions but no confirmation, and we approach that a little bit differently than somebody who's already caught the thief red-handed and now needs information to find out what happened and get as much of their money back as they can and turn the embezzler over to law enforcement.
Do you have any notion or you know, what maybe summaries you guys have as far as, you know, what causes embezzlement with dental office employees?
I think a lot of dentists think that embezzlement is caused because they don't watch things closely enough, which would kind of be like saying that research causes cancer. Embezzlement happens for one simple reason. There's an employee in the office who feels entitled to more than what the dentist pays him or her. And typically the employee will be a long service employee. You know, they kind of have this belief that they're undercompensated. And they wait for the dentist to come into them one day and say, oh, I've been so stupid, I'm going to double your salary. And eventually the employee realizes that that's never going to happen. That what they're looking at for the rest of their life, the rest of their working life anyway, is kind of cost of living increases. And they perceive that to be inequitable, and they decide to rectify it, and one day they come in and start stealing.
And then, you know, there's a lot of myths regarding embezzlement, some of the biggest myths.
Yeah.
What, you know, and obviously you guys are on the front line of this whole process. And you deal with a lot of dental practices and a lot of investigations. What are some of the biggest myths that you think that dentists have in today's market as to embezzlement?
The single biggest one, Stuart, is that people believe that if they make it hard for an embezzler to steal, they won't try. And there's a misanalogization that happens here. You know, a lot of people have alarm systems in their houses. And the alarm system works really well, not because it prevents crime, but because it redirects it somewhere else. So if I'm walking down your street and I'm going to rob your house, or at least that's my plan, and I get to the front door and I see the alarm sticker on the door, I don't go home, join the church choir, and live a life of piousness. I simply move on down your street until I find an easier victim. And what people want to do is they want to assume that the same logic will work in their dental practice. So if I install cameras, if I look at monthly reports carefully, if I do all those things that make it a little more difficult for a thief, then what they assume is that they'll get the same result that the alarm system would produce for them. And they won't. If you're a house burglar, you can choose your victim. If you're an embezzler, you can't. In other words, no thief I've ever met is going to say, well, it's just way too hard from my current employer, so I'm going to quit my job, I'll go find work somewhere else, and I'll invest the 2 to 3 years that it's going to take me to get to know the doctor well enough and learn the systems well enough that I can steal undetected.
You know, one of the things I run into is that doctors think, well, it'll never happen to me.
Yes.
Is that almost a recipe for a disaster?
The feeling that they're somehow safe is the worst place they can be. And you're absolutely right. And when I ask them why they think it will never happen to them, there are a lot of reasons they come up with. One that I hear commonly is, well, I pay my staff really well. In other words, I consciously pay them above the market as a way of buying their honesty. Well, I'll give you another statistic. The typical embezzler takes between 2 and 4% of monthly collections. So in a typical dental office, this is thousands of dollars. There is just no possible way that paying somebody an extra couple of dollars an hour would scratch the same itch.
Especially if you have $1 million worth of collections. That's huge.
Exactly. I mean, the practice that's collecting $100,000 a month, the typical thief is taking somewhere between $2,000 and $4,000 per month.
Wow.
You know, I've seen lots of well-paid staff, but nobody's going to be sort of paid more than the local market to that extent. The other thing we can't forget about is that a lot of people steal not because they specifically need the money, but because they get some kind of gratification from doing it. And there's a case that I think you were involved in with us, Stuart, in fact, where the thief had won a huge amount of money in the state lottery. And the most interesting factor in that case was that after she won, the number was $3 million, after she won $3 million in the state lottery, the amount that she stole from the practice where she was working increased.
Yeah, yep, remember that, yep.
So it wasn't about need. It was about getting some kind of rush from the act of stealing. And even after the state law made this woman, by most people's standards, wealthy, she still wanted that rush.
Yeah. You know, we both do a lot of speaking. A lot of questions or a lot of comments that I get is that, well, my CPA will catch it.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that? Because to me, CPAs don't catch it.
No, they don't. And this is not a dentistry-specific statistic. This comes from the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners. But they suggest that overall, globally, CPAs catch about 8% of embezzlement, which, when you think about it, it's a pretty low number. A couple of reasons for that. And I'm a CPA myself, and I do find a need to stick up for that profession. But what the window that CPAs have into your practice is a fairly narrow one. For example, I've yet to meet a CPA who wants to dig into a practice's entries inside its practice management software and look for embezzlement. That's a pretty technical process, first of all. Most CPAs wouldn't be equipped to do it, and most dentists normally wouldn't want to pay their CPA to do that extra work. So what CPAs work with is your accounting software like QuickBooks and your bank account, but they don't see what happens inside practice management software, and that's typically where most embezzlement is concealed. So there's a big part of embezzlement that they just really have no possibility of ever catching.
This past weekend, I had the opportunity to speak at the Georgia Dental Association, and afterwards, one of the doctors who attended said, "Well, we don't accept cash, so that will never happen to me."
Oh yes.
Have you heard that too?
Daily.
So it really, cash is almost an ear. There's so many ways around it, as I understand it, from what you're saying, that cash is almost, whether you accept it or not, that's almost an irrelevant statement.
Let's be clear. Embezzlers, given the opportunity, will happily steal cash. And when I started investigating embezzlement 25 years ago, the majority of embezzlement was, in fact, stealing of cash. What's changed between 1989 and 2016 is that technology has made it much easier for embezzlers to steal checks, credit card payments, electronic fund deposits, in other words, automatic deposits to your bank account. Any of those things can be adulterated. So if I'm a thief, yes, if cash is available, it's in my pocket. If it's not, I'm not giving up. The other thing about cash in most practices is they take in a relatively small amount of cash, and most embezzlers will want to steal more than the cash that's collected. So instantly they're put into the position of thinking about how to steal other things. It is ridiculously easy in 2016 for an embezzler to cash a check payable to a doctor or to intercept a credit card payment or to redirect electronic funds transfers so that the money goes into the embezzler's bank account instead of the doctor's. Any of those things can be done easily, so we see all of those with a lot of frequency.
So, in you know, doctors get busy, they're churning and burning or drilling and filling, and they ignore the signs.
Yeah.
And you've published some great information on some of the signs, what to look for, don't ignore. Can you name a couple of those for us?
Absolutely. The biggest thing to watch for is the employee who appears super dedicated and, in a sense, is a control freak. The person who comes in early, stays late, comes in on weekends to catch up with paperwork, wants to isolate the doctor from the business end of the practice. And Stuart, you and I have each met a lot of dentists, and I suspect you'll agree with me when I say that almost nobody got into dentistry out of a burning desire to be a small business owner.
Yeah.
That's the curse that comes for most dentists with the privilege of helping people and treating their dental issues.
What is that if the doctor starts realizing that a particular employee is having financial difficulty? Is that a flag?
It can be, although I'll go back to something I said earlier, which is that a lot of employees steal out of greed as opposed to need. So financial difficulty can be a flag, but honestly, we have a lot of good, hardworking, honest dental office employees who struggle financially.
I know we run into cases where if we do a work with a buyer on a practice sale, and you know, doctor's been practicing 35 years, new doctor comes in, wants to change the entire system, upgrade, and you know, get everything digital and just bring it up to date. We find that staff members a lot of times are extremely resistant to upgrades and change. Have you run into that in your investigations?
Absolutely. And let's be clear, everybody I've ever met has some level of resistance to change. You know, nobody who's been working in an office comfortably for 20 years wants to go and learn a completely new computer system simply because the purchaser of the practice decided that whatever system is there isn't good enough and there's something they want more. Nobody's going to joyfully embrace that. However, embezzlers have an extra agenda. If they're currently stealing, they have some methodology that's working with the current software. And a change to a different brand of software or even an upgrade to the newest version of the software that's already in the office threatens that. So their resistance to change tends to be stronger and noticeably stronger than people who are just thinking, you know, I've been using Eaglesoft for 20 years and I just really am not embracing the idea of switching to Dentrix.
You know, you pointed out two things that I never really even thought about until I had some chance to review some of the information that you published out there, and it's great information, is that staff members who are embezzling resist change to consultants, CPAs, and practice advisors. What have you run across on those particular areas? I never even thought about that.
A lot of embezzlement is uncovered by people who work with the dentist somehow. I was on a call yesterday with a consultant from one of the big consulting firms, and she's dealing with a dentist, and she's getting severe pushback from one of the staff members in the office. I mean, it's very clear that this staff member simply does not want the consultant there. And what I said to the consultant and doctor, because I talked to them both yesterday, what I said to them both is, from the perspective of an embezzler, it's relatively easy generally to fool their doctor. This is somebody they've known for years. They know how the doctor thinks. They know what they look at and what they don't. You know, to embezzle successfully under the doctor's eyes is often not terribly challenging. However, a consultant, so this is somebody who focuses on the business of dentistry, who isn't distracted by the challenge of running the practice and doing high-quality dentistry, and who is in a lot of practices and sees differences between them, that's a far more threatening animal to an embezzler than the doctor that he or she works for. And so we get a lot of very good referrals from the consulting community, and that's why.
You know, you've got to have some great do's and don'ts if a doctor suspects embezzlement. Okay, can you maybe touch on a couple of those, what they, you know, do's and don'ts, should and should not do if they suspect embezzlement?
Sure, and I can, great question. I'll narrow it down to really one simple issue. If you suspect that embezzlement might be happening in your practice, the cardinal sin is to let the embezzler know or let the suspect know that you are suspicious. If I am working for you and stealing from you, and I think I'm about to get caught, what I will envisage will happen to me next is that I might go to jail. And most people will go to great lengths to avoid that. The normal response if somebody thinks they're about to get caught is to try to destroy evidence. And evidence in this case is really the financial records of the practice. So I'm working for you, and I think that you're on to me. What I may do next is something as basic as wiping all the data from the computer and destroying the backups. Or it might even be more aggressive. I was talking with a dentist about 8 years ago who suspected embezzlement. He decided that he was going to do a little bit of do-it-yourself investigating, and what he ended up doing was tipping off the suspect to the fact that she was under suspicion. And her response was to come back that night and burn down his office.
Wow.
There was a case, we weren't involved in this at all, but there was a case where a woman in Maryland in 2012 pled guilty to murdering the dentist from whom she'd been embezzling.
Wow.
And the worst part, Stuart, was the amount embezzled was $17,000.
That's unbelievable. Wow.
Now, obviously, she ended up making her life far worse by her action, but sometimes thieves don't think that through. And I would hate for any of your listeners to make themselves the guinea pigs in a sociology experiment about the limits of human behavior when somebody thinks their liberty is jeopardized.
Now, you guys do something that's really unique, and your investigations are pretty much off-site.
Yes.
And that's strategically fantastic. Tell us why that is.
A couple of reasons. The first one is the thing I just mentioned, that we don't want to let a suspect know that they're a suspect. And it's really hard if I park a geeky-looking investigator at your practice for a couple of days to explain them away somehow as, well, they're there to fix the compressor.
Right.
So the first issue is stealth. The second is that gives me a tremendous latitude to place the investigator who is best suited for the particular job. In other words, if we're talking about a client, let's say in Stuart's home state of Georgia, I do have an investigator resident in Georgia. I have another one in Tennessee who's not far away, but they might not be the right person for the job. And if we investigate through the cloud, which is how we do it, we're not married to geography at all. And if the dentist involved is, for example, an orthodontist, then we have specialist investigators who look at orthodontists. None of them live in Georgia or close. But that's not an obstacle if we're investigating remotely. So I can put the investigator who is best suited for this particular file on the job, even though they might live in California or goodness knows even Canada, to do the work.
So how do doctors, you know, how do they not, once they get an idea of what they think is occurring, you know, how do they not make it worse for themselves? How do they not do themselves harm? You know, and going down the really wrong path. How do they protect themselves?
Well, the way they protect themselves is to get expert advice quickly. And I'm happy for them to call us. I'm equally happy for them to see their attorney or somebody who will give them initial guidance and make sure that they don't inadvertently tip off the suspect to the fact that they are a suspect. The other thing that people will do is they'll do things prematurely. They will phone the police, for example. And when you suspect embezzlement in your practice, you are nowhere near ready to call the police. When you have our report in your hand, that's a really good time to call the police, but not when you simply see some numbers on your printout that don't add up, or you've got an employee who's acting a little bit strangely. But
you know,
people will call the police, and then they're very surprised when the police say to them, look, we have absolutely no ability whatsoever to undertake this kind of highly technical investigation. You need to get somebody to help you and then call us back.
They don't have the time.
The other thing that that the police hate are files that are open for a long time. And when somebody calls them and they open a file, but they're not really in a position to advance it at all, that one quickly becomes stale. And then convincing them later to dig into it a little more deeply becomes a bit of a challenge. The second thing that is equally logical and yet equally wrong is to contact the company that provides you with insurance for employee dishonesty early on. Same problem. They can't do anything with the file until somebody answers some questions for them that at that point the doctor just is not ready to address.
You know, I told a doctor a couple of weeks ago that he needs to do two things after we got a call, and I want your sort of input on this. One is that he needs to force his employees to take vacations, take time off, which a lot of them, people who embezzle don't want to do.
And absolutely right.
They really need to keep their ears open. If they're hearing patient disputes on bills and payments and not being posted right, I mean, are those flags?
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you in terms of a doctor who has clean decks in the sense that they don't currently suspect embezzlement. If somebody calls you with suspicion of embezzlement, then I would suggest that those two steps might be ill-advised right now.
Yeah.
Again, if somebody has suspicions, the first thing I tell them is don't change anything in your practice. You know, don't come back Monday morning and say, okay, now everybody has to take vacations. Because if you have a thief already and you start imposing changes, they're going to wonder what you really know, and they may react in ways that you really don't want them to. But as general advice to dentists, I think the two things you just said are fantastic.
Well, I tell you, Dave, you've given us some enormous information and stuff that I never even really thought about. And while I'm taking notes, I'm thinking, geez, I really need to look into these issues. I mean, this enormous information. Is there anything else you want to add maybe that we haven't covered for the members of the profession who will be listening to this podcast? Anything else you want to add or you know, make note on?
No, I don't think so. We've covered a lot of good issues here, and I think
a lot of things to think about. That's for sure.
Definitely,
that's for sure. Well, I know that you're very busy, and you guys are one of the best at what you do. And I've always enjoyed talking to you guys and getting all the information that you have to offer. And I appreciate you being part of our podcast series. I know our doctors will benefit from this. And we're just glad to have you part of the series.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you, Stuart.
David, thank you.